Ladies, did you know that your ability to live and feel authentically feminine is connected to your sexual power? Gentlemen, have you ever wondered what's behind those days when she seems to shine from within? If you answered yes to either of those questions, stay tuned for The O-Spot with best-selling romance author Rachel Kenley and get to the source of your power so you are living a life of greater connection and joy.
Welcome and good evening. It is Wednesday, April 13th. I'm Rachel Kenley. Welcome to The O-Spot. Can you believe we're almost halfway through April? I have to admit, I hate even saying that out loud because it feels like, you know, I made an appointment. I just had my nails done yesterday and I tend to get them done because I have acrylics every 3 weeks. And my next appointment's in May. And I can't handle it. I can't. Nope. I'm telling you right now, I'm having a lot of trouble with this. So, I'm actually having a really, really rough day. I'm gonna own that up front. And because of it, I'm going to do something I haven't done in quite a while, which is I'm going to share some TED Talks with you, in part because my voice is going a bit and I am completely just, I'm very, I would say detached, except I feel like overly emotional. Like I could start crying at any minute. So I actually picked some TED Talks about one's about a simple way to break a bad habit. And the other one is The Surprise Science of Happiness with Dan Gilbert. And I thought they both seemed really appropriate because one of the things I'm feeling down about is around the fact that I know, you know this from being here with me, I know my passions, I know my desires, so why am I making choices that really aren't just moving me forward? And I'm feeling very frustrated and pained by that. But before I get into all of that this week, I want to share something with you for next week because I don't want to forget. Next week, my guest will be the extremely talented and charming and wonderful New York Times bestselling author Stephanie Ivanovich. Stephanie writes women's fiction, and her third book, The Total Package, just came out. Let me check the date. Like 3 weeks ago? No, not even. Yeah, about 3 weeks ago, March 15th. It is currently selling extremely well on Amazon and elsewhere, and I'm very, very excited for her and thrilled to have her here. Her first book, if you're looking to pick them up, was called Big Girl Panties. Her second was The Sweet Spot, and The Total Package is her, as I said, her third book. And I'll read you the info about it here. Heartthrob, star quarterback, Tyson Palmer has it all, $1 million arm, a winning season, and the promise of a Super Bowl ring. But more importantly, football's biggest star is the ultimate comeback kid. After an addiction to painkillers nearly derailed his career, Tyson got sober and went from zero to hero in the eyes of the public. But one person remains unconvinced. Danny Carr, a sports commentator with high ratings and a following of her own. Danny can't forgive Tyson's transgressions or forget a single passionate night with him back in college. To make things worse, Tyson doesn't realize that the bombshell with the huge ratings, that's huge ratings, not anything else, okay, is the cute co-ed whose heart he once broke. But can the sports journalist trying to claw her way to the top and a quarterback who knows all about rock bottom make it to the Super Bowl without destroying each other? And what will happen when Tyson, riding high now that he's revived his career, realizes he needs to make even more and needs to make an even more important comeback with Danny? Can he use his million-dollar moves to get past her defenses, or will she sideline him for good? So that is the Total Package. Pick it up this week. Kindle, hardcover. It says paperback, but that one can't be right because it's not out in paperback yet. Oh, yes, the paperback is coming in September, so you can order it now, but you can't read it that way now. So check that out. She writes with a touch of fun and laughter and truth and emotion, and I think you'll be hooked. because I know I was. I've had the opportunity to meet her a couple of times. I heard her speak at a conference down in New Jersey. I've run into her at conferences. I am so proud and pleased, and I'll say this again next week probably, that all my copies of her books are signed. And let me tell you a little bit about her. She is, as she says on her website, a full-fledged Jersey girl from Asbury Park. She began writing fiction while waiting for her cues during countless community theater projects. She attended New York Conservatory for the Dramatic Arts, performed with several improvisational troupes, and acted in a few small-budget movies, all in preparation for the greatest job she's ever had, raising her 2 cents. And I can agree with the acting thing kind of helps on that. And now a full-time writer, she's an avid sports fan, and she holds a black belt in Taekwondo. So I cannot wait to talk to her about those things, because as a mother of 2 sons myself, we have lots and lots in common. So if you can also, by the way, check her out on Goodreads and on Facebook. She's on the internet in all the appropriate places. And I suppose a few inappropriate places as well. I wanted to make sure you all knew that. Another thing I wanted to let you all know is there are some new courses signed up for the Writers Business School. So if you are a writer, and that's one of the reasons why you have found me here, please head on over to thewritersbusinessschool.com and check out under upcoming courses what is happening. Platform is where we as a business like to start your business career, because it will help you do everything you want to do without feeling like you're selling or feeling like it's unnatural or you're doing something that somebody else did but isn't right for you. It's one of my favorite topics. I do get to teach the class, so come join me at thewritersbusinessschool.com. And if you're an author and you haven't been making the money you've wanted and getting the sales or reaching the audience size that you want, this will most definitely help you. All right. So in order to pick myself up, I'm heading over to YouTube and to where is my – I'm trying to find my O-Spot list. Let's see if I have it up. Oh, you know what? I think it's under something else. So let me find Oh, my goodness. If you put the O-Spot into YouTube, you got a couple of very interesting responses. Oh my goodness, how to get rid of acne overnight. You get stuff on the movie Spotlight. Okay, just totally, totally bizarre. Not what I was expecting at all. All right, I can't find it, of course. So, I wanted to do, last week I did, Secrets by Mary Lambert, which I really love as a song. And the week before that, I did the Lady Gaga song, You Don't Know How It Feels. You Don't Know How It Feels. So this week, I also, since I'm just in, as I said, a down mood, I want to give you something that's going to put you in an up mood. So, and hopefully do the same thing for me. And hang on a second, I'm going to bring that down. What I am going to play is Katy Perry's Firework. This is off of the official video for it, and I hope it will pick you up the way I find it picks me up.
Chance for you, there's a spark in you, you just gotta deny the light and let not be replaced if you only knew what the future holds after a hurricane. From the rainbow, maybe a reason why all the doors are closed, so you could open one that leads you to the perfect road. Like a lightning bolt, your heart will glow, and when it's time to go, you just gotta ignite the light and let it shine. Just on the night, let the fourth of July. 'Cause baby, you're a firework. Come on, show 'em all your work. Make 'em go as you shoot across the sky.
Come on back after the break for the next section of the OSPY.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Have you been searching for a perspective beyond the mainstream? Check it out. Join your hosts, Yolito Pascual and Diana Gold-Holland, on Share International Radio for thought-provoking views behind the news, Sundays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, on OM Times Radio. You can also find us at shareontheairradio.org. This may be the message of hope you've been waiting for.
Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Want to be a better communicator? Do you want to better connect with the important people in your life? Do you want to enrich your relationships? If so, join me, Matthew Cooper, on the Positive Control System show every Wednesday evening at 11 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time on OM Times Radio. I'll meet you there.
Conscious media for conscious minds. OM Times.
Welcome back to the O-Spot. I'm your host, Rachel Kenley, having one of my rough days, the days that we all have that are just, they aren't what we had thought when we got up in the morning and we're planning things out. You know those days. I know those days. We've all had those days. We're going to have more of those days, but not right now. Right now, I'm going to, I had said I wanted to play this one by Judson Brewer called A Simple Way to Break a Bad Habit, because one of the things that sort of set me off down this emotional suckhole, as it were, was realizing that even when I know what to do, I don't do what I know what I should do. So Judson's talk is called A Simple Way to Break a That, A Simple Way to Break a Bad Habit. It was filmed in November of 2015, and it has over 3 million total views on TED, TED.com, which means it probably has even more of that than that on YouTube. The sort of blurb about it says, can we break bad habits by being more curious about them? Psychiatrist Judson Brewer studies the relationship between mindfulness and addiction, from smoking to overeating to all those other things we do, even though we know they're bad for us. Learn more about the mechanism of habit development and discover how a simple but profound tactic might help you beat your next urge to smoke, snack, or check a text while driving. Ooh. And Judson Brewer calls himself a mindful addiction doctor. He is a psychiatrist and addiction expert, and he researches mindfulness techniques that effectively help quell cravings of all kinds. So you're going to hear the little ding, ding, ding. That is part of TED's openings. And here we go.
When I was first learning to meditate, the instruction was to simply pay attention to my breath, and when my mind wandered, to bring it back. It sounded simple enough, yet I'd sit on these silent retreats, sweating through t-shirts in the middle of winter. I'd take naps every chance I got because it was really hard work. Actually, it was exhausting. The instruction was simple enough, but I was missing something really important. So why is it so hard to pay attention? Well, studies show that even when we're really trying to pay attention to something, like maybe this talk, at some point about half of us will drift off into a daydream or have this urge to check our Twitter feed. So what's going on here? It turns out that we're fighting one of the most evolutionarily conserved learning processes currently known in science, one that's conserved back to the most basic nervous systems known to man. This reward-based learning process is called positive and negative reinforcement and basically goes like this. We see some food that looks good. Our brain says, calories, survival. We eat the food, we taste it, it tastes good. And especially with sugar, our body sends a signal to our brain that says, remember what you're eating and where you found it. We lay down this context-dependent memory and learn to repeat the process next time. See food, eat food, feel good. Repeat. Trigger, behavior, reward. Simple, right? Well, after a while, our creative brains say, you know what? You can use this for more than just remembering where food is. You know, next time you feel bad, why don't you try eating something good so you'll feel better? We thank our brains for the great idea. Try this and quickly learn that if we eat chocolate or ice cream when we're mad or sad, we feel better. Same process, just a different trigger. Instead of this hunger signal coming from our stomach, this emotional signal, feeling sad, triggers that urge to eat. Maybe in our teenage years, we were a nerd at school, and we see those rebel kids outside smoking, we think, hey, I want to be cool, so we start smoking. The Marlboro Man wasn't a dork, and that was no accident. See cool, smoke to be cool, feel good. Repeat. Trigger, behavior, reward. And each time we do this, we learn to repeat the process, and it becomes a habit. So later, feeling stressed out triggers that urge to smoke a cigarette or to eat something sweet. Now with these same brain processes, we've gone from learning to survive to literally killing ourselves with these habits. Obesity and smoking are among the leading preventable causes of morbidity and mortality in the world. So back to my breath. What if instead of fighting our brains or trying to force ourselves to pay attention, we instead tapped into this natural reward-based learning process, but added a twist? What if instead we just got really curious about what was happening in our momentary experience? I'll give you an example. In my lab, we studied whether mindfulness training could help people quit smoking. Now, just like trying to force myself to pay attention to my breath, they could try to force themselves to quit smoking. And the majority of them had tried this before and failed, on average, 6 times. Now, with mindfulness training, we dropped a bit about forcing and instead focused on being curious. In fact, we even told them to smoke. What? Now, we said, go ahead and smoke, just be really curious about what it's like when you do. And what did they notice? Well, here's an example from one of our smokers. She said, mindful smoking smells like stinky cheese and tastes like chemicals. Yuck. Now, she knew cognitively that smoking was bad for her. That's why she joined our program. What she discovered just by being curiously aware when she smoked was that smoking tastes like shit. Now, she moved from knowledge to wisdom. She moved from knowing in her head that smoking was bad for her to knowing it in her bones. And the spell of smoking was broken. She started to become disenchanted with her behavior. Now, the prefrontal cortex, that youngest part of our brain from an evolutionary perspective, it understands on an intellectual level that we shouldn't smoke. And it tries its hardest to help us change our behavior, to help us stop smoking, to help us stop eating that second, that third, that fourth cookie. We call this cognitive control. We're using cognition to control our behavior. Unfortunately, this is also the first part of our brain that goes offline when we get stressed out, which isn't that helpful. Now, we can all relate to this in our own experience. We're much more likely to do things like yell at our spouse or kids when we're stressed out or tired, even though we know it's not going to be helpful. We just can't help ourselves. Now, when the prefrontal cortex goes offline, we fall back into our old habits, which is why this disenchantment is so important. Seeing what we get from our habits helps us understand them at a deeper level, to know it in our bones, so we don't have to force ourselves to hold back or restrain ourselves from behavior. We're just less interested in doing it in the first place. And this is what mindfulness is all about. Seeing really clearly what we get when we get caught up in our behaviors, becoming disenchanted on a visceral level, and from this disenchanted stance, naturally letting go. This isn't to say that, poof, magically we quit smoking, but over time, as we learn to see more and more clearly the results of our actions, we let go of old habits and form new ones. The paradox here is that mindfulness is just about being really interested and getting close and personal with what's actually happening in our bodies and minds from moment to moment. This willingness to turn toward our experience rather than trying to make unpleasant cravings go away as quickly as possible. And this willingness to turn toward our experience is supported by curiosity, which is naturally rewarding. What does curiosity feel like? It feels good. And what happens when we get curious? We start to notice that cravings are simply made up of body sensations. Oh, there's tightness, there's tension, there's restlessness, and that these body sensations come and go. These are bite-sized pieces of experiences that we can manage from moment to moment rather than getting clobbered by this huge, scary craving that we choke on. In other words, when we get curious, we step out of our old fear-based reactive habit patterns and we step into being. We become this inner scientist where we're eagerly awaiting that next data point. Now, this might sound too simplistic to affect behavior, but in one study we found that mindfulness training was twice as good as gold standard therapy at helping people quit smoking. So it actually works. And when we studied the brains of experienced meditators, we found that parts of a neural network of self-referential processing called the default mode network were at play. Now, one current hypothesis is that a region of this network called the posterior cingulate cortex is activated not necessarily by craving itself, but when we get caught up in it, when we get sucked in and it takes us for a ride. In contrast, when we let go, step out of the process just by being curiously aware of what's happening, this same brain region quiets down. Now we're testing app and online-based mindfulness training programs that target these core mechanisms. And ironically, use the same technology that's driving us to distraction to help us step out of our unhealthy habit patterns of smoking, of stress eating, and other addictive behaviors. Now, remember that bit about context-dependent memory? We can deliver these tools to people's fingertips in the context that matter most, so we can help them tap into their inherent capacity to be curiously aware right when that urge to smoke or stress eat or whatever arises. So if you don't smoke or stress eat, maybe the next time you feel this urge to check your email when you're bored or you're trying to distract yourself from work, or maybe to compulsively respond to that text message when you're driving, see if you can tap into this natural capacity, just be curiously aware of what's happening in your body and mind in that moment. It will just be another chance to perpetuate one of our endless and exhaustive habit loops, or step out of it. Instead of see text message, compulsively text back, feel a little bit better, notice the urge, get curious, feel the joy of letting go, and repeat. Thank you.
I don't know about you, but I really like the idea of mindfulness being directed toward curiosity. In other words, instead of being in a place where I say, see, I'm overeating again, this is so bad for me, and going down that spiral of negative thoughts, instead saying, huh, I wonder why I'm feeling that way. What am I really thinking about? What am I not thinking about? What could I try to think about instead? So it's a different way of looking at mindfulness, because usually the mindfulness becomes negative and unsupportive. All right, there's my music. I thought I heard that. I'm having real trouble hearing it tonight. But come back. Come back after the break, and we're going to discuss or talk or listen, I should say, to more about being inspired, the surprising science of happiness, here on The O Spot with me, Rachel Kenley, on OM Times.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
The Conscious Parenting Radio Show provides inspiration and resources for loving, empowering, and respecting your children and yourself. Join me, Timothy, every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time as we consciously explore proven ways of living together in happiness, health, and harmony.
Are you trying to get from point A to point B and need a little advice? Connect with the counselors at OM Times Advisors. Whether you're looking for a life coach or a spiritual intuitive, the advisors participating at advisors.omtimes.com were carefully chosen based on their gifts, skills, and professionalism. OM Times Advisors, connecting you with the best advisors in the business.
The truth is, you can't change the world if you're broke. I know, I tried. Isn't it time you turned your life's calling into a profitable, freedom-based business? I'm Michelle Barr. Join me every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern for Sacred Success.
The Real Conscious Connection. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Welcome back to The O Spot. I'm your drained, tired, but feeling a little happier host, Rachel Kenley. I mean, first of all, how can you not feel a little more upbeat after Katy Perry's Firework? And I know that you are all going to love hearing from Stephanie Ivanovich in next week. And now we've listened to Judson Brewer talk about how creativity as a way of being mindful can help us break habits that aren't supporting us, which, as I said earlier, I really, really like. So now I'm going to switch us to happiness. It's a 20-minute presentation, so I'm going to have to stop it before when my break comes up. It's called The Surprising Science of Happiness. And the way it's described is, happiness is such an elusive, slippery thing, but psychologist and human happiness expert Dan Gilbert is here to tell us that we can actually synthesize it. He provides several examples of people who have made mental lemonade out of lemons, including a man who spent 37 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit and called the experience glorious. Now, I'm not sure we can all get to quite that point, but let's see what we can do to make ourselves, oh my God, I just synthesize happiness.
you have 21 minutes to speak, 2 million years seems like a really long time. But evolutionarily, 2 million years is nothing. Yet in 2 million years, the human brain has nearly tripled in mass, going from a 1.25-pound brain of our ancestor here, Habilis, to the almost 3-pound meatloaf that everybody here has between their ears. What is it about a big brain that nature was so eager for every one of us to have one? Well, it turns out when brains triple in size, they don't just get 3 times bigger, they gain new structures. And one of the main reasons that our brain got so big is because it got a new part called the frontal lobe, and particularly a part called the prefrontal cortex. Now, what does a prefrontal cortex do for you that should justify the entire architectural overhaul of the human skull in the blink of evolutionary time? Well, turns out the prefrontal cortex does lots of things, but one of the most important things it does is it is an experience simulator. You know, pilots practice in flight simulators so that they don't make real mistakes in planes. Human beings have this marvelous adaptation that they can actually have experiences in their heads before they try them out in real life. This is a trick that none of our ancestors could do, that no other animal can do quite like we can. It's a marvelous adaptation. It's up there with opposable thumbs and standing upright in language as one of the things that got our species out of the trees and into the shopping mall. Now, all of you have done this. I mean, you know, Ben and Jerry's doesn't have liver and onion ice cream, and it's not because they whipped some up, tried it, and went, yuck. It's because from, without leaving your armchair, you can simulate that flavor and say yuck before you make it. Let's see how your experience simulators are working. Let's just run a quick diagnostic before I proceed with the rest of the talk. Here's 2 different futures that I invite you to contemplate, and you can try to simulate them and tell me which one you think you might prefer. One of them is winning the lottery. This is about $314 million. And the other is becoming paraplegic. So just give it a moment of thought. You probably don't feel like you need a moment of thought. And interestingly, there are data on these 2 groups of people, data on how happy they are. And this is exactly what you expected, isn't it? But these aren't the data. I made these up. These are the data. You failed the pop quiz, and you're hardly 5 minutes into the lecture. Because the fact is that a year after losing the use of their legs, and a year after winning the lotto, lottery winners and paraplegics are equally happy with their lives. Now, don't feel too bad about failing the first pop quiz, because everybody fails all of the pop quizzes all of the time. The research that my laboratory has been doing, that economists and psychologists around the country have been doing, have revealed something really quite startling to us. Something we call the impact bias, which is the tendency for the simulator to work badly. For the simulator to make you believe that different outcomes are more different than in fact they really are. From field studies to laboratory studies, we see that winning or losing an election, gaining or losing a romantic partner, getting or not getting a promotion, passing or not passing a college test, on, have far less impact, less intensity, and much less duration than people expect them to have. In fact, a recent study, this almost floors me, a recent study showing how major life traumas affect people suggests that if it happened over 3 months ago, with only a few exceptions, it has no impact whatsoever on your happiness. Why? Because happiness can be synthesized. Sir Thomas Brown wrote in 1642, "I am the happiest man alive. I have that in me that can convert poverty to riches, adversity to prosperity. I am more invulnerable than Achilles. Fortune hath not one place to hit me." What kind of remarkable machinery does this guy have in his head? Well, it turns out it's precisely the same remarkable machinery that all of us have. Human beings have something that we might think of as a psychological immune system, a system of cognitive processes, largely non-conscious cognitive processes, that help them change their views of the world so that they can feel better about the worlds in which they find themselves. Like Sir Thomas, you have this machine. Unlike Sir Thomas, you seem not to know it. We synthesize happiness, but we think happiness is a thing to be found. Now, You don't need me to tell you, give you too many examples of people synthesizing happiness, I suspect, though I'm going to show you some experimental evidence. You don't have to look very far for evidence. I, as a challenge to myself, since I say this once in a while in lectures, I took a copy of the New York Times and tried to find some instances of people synthesizing happiness. And here are three guys synthesizing happiness. I'm so much better off physically, financially, emotionally, and almost every other way. Mentally, almost every other way. I don't have 1 minute's regret. It was a glorious experience. I believe it turned out for the best. Who are these characters who are so damn happy? Well, the first one is Jim Wright. Some of you are old enough to remember. He was the chairman of the House of Representatives. And he resigned in disgrace when this young Republican named Newt Gingrich found out about a shady book deal he had done. He lost everything. Most powerful Democrat in the country, he lost everything. He lost his money, he lost his power. What does he have to say all these years later about it? I am so much better off physically, financially, mentally, and in almost every other way. What other way would there be to be better off? Vegetably, minerally, animally? He's pretty much covered in there. Maurice Bickham is somebody you've never heard of. Maurice Bickham uttered these words. Upon being released, he was 78 years old and spent 37 years in Louisiana State Penitentiary for a crime he didn't commit. He was ultimately exonerated at the age of 78 through DNA evidence. And what did he have to say about his experience? I don't have 1 minute's regret. It was a glorious experience. Glorious! This guy is not saying, what? You know, there's some nice guys. They had a gym. It's glorious, a word we usually reserve for something like a religious experience. Harry S. Langerman uttered these words, and he's somebody you might have known but didn't, because in 1949 he read a little article in the paper about a hamburger stand owned by these two brothers named McDonald's, and he thought, that's a really neat idea, so he went to find them. They said, we'd give you a franchise on this for $3,000. Harry went back to New York, asked his brother, who was an investment banker, to loan him the $3,000, and his brother's immortal words were, you idiot. Nobody eats hamburgers. He wouldn't lend him the money. And of course, 6 months later, Ray Kroc had exactly the same idea. It turns out people do eat hamburgers. And Ray Kroc, for a while, became the richest man in America. Oh, and then finally, you know, the best of all possible worlds. Some of you recognize this young photo of Pete Best, who was the original drummer for the Beatles, until they, you know, kind of like sent him out on an errand and snuck away and picked up Ringo on a tour. Well, in 1994, when Pete Best was interviewed, yes, he's still a drummer. Yes, he's a studio musician. He had this to say, I'm happier than I would have been with the Beatles. Okay, there's something important to be learned from these people, and it is the secret of happiness. Here it is, finally to be revealed. First, accrue wealth, power, and prestige, then lose it. Second, spend as much of your life in prison as you possibly can. Third, make somebody else really, really rich. And finally, never, ever join the Beatles. Okay, now, I, like Z. Frank, can predict your next thought, which is, yeah, right. Because when people synthesize happiness, as these gentlemen seem to have done, we all smile at them, but we kind of roll our eyes and say, yeah, right, you never really wanted the job. Oh, yeah, right. You really didn't have that much in common with her, and you figured that out just about the time she threw the engagement ring in your face. We smirk because we believe that synthetic happiness is not of the same quality as what we might call natural happiness. What are these terms? Natural happiness is what we get when we get what we wanted, and synthetic happiness is what we make when we don't get what we wanted. And in our society, we have a strong belief that synthetic happiness is of an inferior kind. Why do we have that belief? Well, it's very simple. What kind of economic engine would keep churning if we believe that not getting what we want could make us just as happy as getting it? With all apologies to my friend Mathieu Ricard, a shopping mall full of Zen monks is not going to be particularly profitable because they don't want stuff enough. I want to suggest to you that synthetic happiness is every bit as real and enduring as the kind of happiness you stumble upon when you get exactly what you are aiming for. Now, I'm a scientist, so I'm going to do this not with rhetoric, but by marinating you in a little bit of data. Let me first show you an experimental paradigm that is used to demonstrate the synthesis of happiness among regular old folks. And this isn't mine. This is a 50-year-old paradigm called the free choice paradigm. It's very simple. You bring in, say, six objects, and you ask a subject to rank them from the most to the least liked. In this case, because the experiment I'm going to tell you about uses them, these are Monet prints. So everybody can rank these Monet prints from the one they like the most to the one they like the least. Now we give you a choice. We happen to have some extra prints in the closet. We're going to give you one as your prize to take home. We happen to have number 3 and number 4, we tell the subject. That's a bit of a difficult choice because neither one is preferred strongly to the other, but naturally, people tend to pick number 3 because they liked it a little better than number 4. Sometime later, it could be 15 minutes, it could be 15 days, the same stimuli are put before the subject and the subject is asked to re-rank the stimuli. Tell us how much you like them now. What happens? Watch as happiness is synthesized. This is the result that has been replicated over and over again. You're watching happiness be synthesized. Would you like to see it again? Happiness! The one I got is really better than I thought. That other one I didn't get sucks. That's the synthesis of happiness now. What's the right response to that? Yeah, right. Now, here's the experiment we did, and I hope this is going to convince you that yeah, right was not the right response. We did this experiment with a group of patients who had anterograde amnesia. These are hospitalized patients. Most of them have Korsakoff syndrome, a polyneurotic psychosis that they drank way too much and they can't make new memories. Okay, they remember their child.
Aren't you dying to know how this turns out? Synthetic happiness here on the O-Spot. Come back after the break. Let's find out how this turns out.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hello, I'm Miriam Knight of New Consciousness Review, inviting you to my new show where I interview the rising stars of the conscious awakening. We'll explore the many faces of consciousness in action and intriguing perspectives on life, the universe, and everything in between. Join us each Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern on the Rising Stars Show.
What if business could be fun? What if business is the adventure of living? What are you choosing? Where do you do business that makes it easier, more fun, or more joyful for you? We'd love to see where you do business. Connect with us on Instagram at Joy of Business or Twitter at Joy of Business and share your pictures with hashtags Business Done Where and Joy of Business. Let's change the world with business.
Eros Evolution is where sexuality and spirituality meets. Join me, clinical sexologist Martha Tara Lee, on Eros Evolution on Thursdays, 4 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Welcome back to the O-Spot. I am still your host, Rachel Kenley. And I don't know if you can hear it in my voice, but I can, and I can feel it in my body. I am definitely feeling better. That's in part because of what we're listening to, and it's in part because I'm getting to do this with you. I'm getting to be with you and share this with you and be honest with you. I guess I am. I am synthesizing my own happiness by simply owning my odd feelings. Okie doke. So let's get back to, wrong tab. Let's get back to Mr. Dan Gilbert on the joys in some ways of synthesizing happiness.
One I didn't get sucks. That's the synthesis of happiness. Now, what's the right response to that? Yeah, right. Now. Here's the experiment we did, and I hope this is going to convince you that yeah, right was not the right response. We did this experiment with a group of patients who had anterograde amnesia. These are hospitalized patients. Most of them have Korsakoff syndrome, a polyneurotic psychosis that they drank way too much and they can't make new memories. Okay, they remember their childhood, but if you walk in and introduce yourself and then leave the room, when you come back, they don't know who you are. We took our Monet prints to the hospital, and we asked these patients to rank them from the one they liked the most to the one they liked the least. We then gave them the choice between number 3 and number 4. Like everybody else, they said, gee, thanks, doc, that's great. I could use a new print. I'll take number 3. We explained we would have number 3 mailed to them. We gathered up our materials, and we went out of the room and counted to a half hour. Back into the room, we say, hi, we're back. The patients, bless them, say, oh, doc, I'm sorry. I got a memory problem. That's why I'm here. If I've met you before, I don't remember. Really, Jim, you don't remember? I was just here with the Monet prints. Sorry, doc, I just don't have a clue. No problem, Jim. All I want you to do is rank these for me from the one you like the most to the one you like the least. What do they do? Well, let's first check and make sure they're really amnesiac. We ask these amnesiac patients to tell us which one they own, which one they chose last time, which one is theirs. And what we find is amnesiac patients just guess. These are normal controls. If I did this with you, all of you would know which print you chose. But if I do this with amnesiac patients, they don't have a clue. They can't pick their print out of a lineup. Here's what normal controls do. They synthesize happiness, right? This is the change in liking score, the change from the first time they ranked to the second time they ranked. Normal controls show that was the magic I showed you. Now I'm showing it to you in graphical form. The one I own is better than I thought. The one I didn't own, the one I left behind, is not as good as I thought. Amnesiacs do exactly the same thing. Think about this result. These people like better the one they own, but they don't know they own it. Yeah, right is not the right response. What these people did when they synthesized happiness is they really, truly changed their affective, hedonic, aesthetic reactions to that poster. They're not just saying it because they own it, because they don't know they own it. Now, when psychologists show you bars, you know that they are showing you averages of lots of people. And yet, all of us have this psychological immune system, this capacity to synthesize happiness, but some of us do this trick better than others. And some situations allow anybody to do it more effectively than other situations do. It turns out that freedom, the ability to make up your mind and change your mind, is the friend of natural happiness, because it allows you to choose among all those delicious futures that and find the one that you would most enjoy. But freedom to choose, to change and make up your mind, is the enemy of synthetic happiness. And I'm going to show you why. Dilbert already knows, of course. You're reading the cartoon as I'm talking. Dogbert's tech support, how may I abuse you? My printer prints a blank page after every document. Why would you complain about getting free paper? Free? Aren't you just getting my own paper? Egad, man, look at the quality of the free paper compared to your lousy regular paper. Only a fool or a liar would say that they look the same. Huh. Now that you mention it, it does seem a little silkier. What are you doing? I'm helping people accept the things they cannot change. Indeed. The psychological immune system works best when we are totally stuck, when we are trapped. This is the difference between dating and marriage, right? I mean, you go out on a date with a guy and he picks his nose. You don't go out on another date. You're married to a guy and he picks his nose. Yeah, he has a heart of gold. Don't touch the fruitcake, right? You find a way to be happy with what's happened. Now, what I want to show you is that people don't know this about themselves, and not knowing this can work to our supreme disadvantage. Here's an experiment we did at Harvard. We created a photography course, a black and white photography course, and we allowed students to come in and learn how to use a darkroom. So we gave them cameras, they went around campus, they took 12 pictures of their favorite professors in their dorm room and their dog and all the other things they wanted to have Harvard memories of. They bring us the camera, we make up a contact sheet. They figure out which are the two best pictures, and we now spend 6 hours teaching them about darkrooms, and they blow two of them up, and they have two gorgeous 8x10 glossies of meaningful things to them, and we say, which one would you like to give up? They say, I have to give one up. Oh, yes, we need one as evidence of the class project. So you have to give me one, you have to make a choice, you get to keep one, and I get to keep one. Now, there are two conditions in this experiment. In one case, the students are told, but you know, if you want to change your mind, I'll always have the other one here. And in the next 4 days before I actually mail it to headquarters, I'll be glad to, headquarters, I'll be glad to swap it out with you. In fact, I'll come to your dorm room and give me an email. Better yet, I'll check with you. You ever want to change your mind? It's totally returnable. The other half of the students are told exactly the opposite. Make your choice, and by the way, the mail is going out, in 2 minutes to England. Your picture will be winging its way over the Atlantic. You will never see it again. Now, half of the students in each of these conditions are asked to make predictions about how much they're going to come to like the picture that they keep and the picture they leave behind. Other students are just sent back to their little dorm rooms, and they are measured over the next 3 to 6 days on their liking, satisfaction with the pictures. And look at what we find. First of all, here's what students think is going to happen. They think they're going to maybe come to like the picture they chose a little more than the one they left behind, but these are not statistically significant differences. It really, it's a very small increase, and it doesn't much matter whether they were in the reversible or irreversible condition. Wrong-o, bad simulators. Because here's what's really happening, both right before the swap and 5 days later. People who are stuck with that picture, who have no choice, who can never change their mind, like it a lot. And people who are deliberating, should I return it? Have I gotten the right one? Maybe this isn't the good one. Maybe I left the good one. Have killed themselves. They don't like their picture. And in fact, even after the opportunity to swap has expired, they still don't like their picture. Why? Because the irreversible condition is not conducive to the synthesis of happiness. So here's the final piece of this experiment. We bring in a whole new group of naive Harvard students, and we say, you know, we're doing a photography course, and we can do it one of two ways. We could do it so that when you take the two pictures, you'd have 4 days to change your mind. Or we're doing another course where you take the two pictures, and you make up your mind right away, and you can never change it. Which course would you like to be in? Duh! 66% of the students, two-thirds, prefer to be in the course where they have the opportunity to change their mind. Hello, 66% of the students choose to be in the course in which they will ultimately be deeply dissatisfied with the picture. Because they do not know the conditions under which synthetic happiness grows. The Bard said everything best, of course, and he's making my point here, but he's making it hyperbolically. 'Tis nothing good or bad, but thinking makes it so. It's nice poetry, but that can't exactly be right. Is there really nothing good or bad? Is it really the case that gallbladder surgery and a trip to Paris are just the same thing? That seems like a one-question IQ test. They can't be exactly the same. In more turgid prose, but closer to the truth, was the father of modern capitalism, Adam Smith, and he said this. This is worth contemplating. The great source of both the misery and disorders of human life seems to arise from overrating the difference between one permanent situation and another. Some of these situations may no doubt deserve to be preferred to others, but none of them can deserve to be pursued with that passionate ardor which drives us to violate the rules either of prudence or of justice, or to corrupt the future tranquility of our minds either by shame from the remembrance of our own folly or by remorse for the horror of our own injustice. In other words, yes, some things are better than others. We should have preferences that lead us into one future over another. But when those preferences drive us too hard and too fast because we have overrated the difference between these futures, we are at risk. When our ambition is bounded, it leads us to work joyfully. When our ambition is unbounded, it leads us to lie, to cheat, to steal, to hurt others, to sacrifice things of real value. When our fears are bounded, we're prudent, we're cautious, we're thoughtful. When our fears are unbounded and overblown, we're reckless and we're cowardly. The lesson I want to leave you with from these data is that our longings and our worries are both to some degree overblown because we have within us the capacity to manufacture the very commodity we are constantly chasing when we choose experience. Thank you.
So, my lovely listeners, that is an oh wow. that is something to think about. That limitlessness sounds wonderful, but the truth is, when you know your boundary within it, you can be exceedingly, exceedingly happy. And you know what? That's what I wish for all of us. So everyone, have a wonderful week. Join me next week on the O-Spot with my special guest, Stephanie Ivanovich. This is Rachel Kenley for the O-Spot and Om Times. Good night.